welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us, and we're going to be around for an hour talking. We're following the money, as we always do. Got three very interesting guests today. We're leading off with Tom O'Rourke. He is an attorney, a Washington area attorney, actually based in Rockville, and he's going to be talking about estate planning and managing your money and that sort of thing. Tom and I are trying to figure out how long we've known each other. It's probably been close to 30 years.
It's been a while. It's been a long time.
I remember I was at a out-of-town conference, and they had different seminars, and I wanted to just pop in and you know, be seen and then leave. And I went into yours and stayed for the full 3 hours. It was, you know, just absolutely riveting. And then Tom later on did some estate planning for me, which is so I cannot recommend him high enough. Tom, thanks for trekking down here from Rockville.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I'm glad to be here.
Listen, the average federal, I guess most people are probably worth more than we think we are.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, they talk about, well, I don't have a $1 million estate and all this, but you know, in the Washington area, I guess in particular, maybe here more than almost anywhere else in the country, people have homes. Somebody once said the secret of financial success is to have gotten married 30 years ago and stay married.
That's right. That's right. Every time somebody mentions that, I think of a lady that I met a number of years ago. I started the meeting by saying, if you have more than $1 million in assets, we at least need to think about doing some tax planning. She said, for God's sake, yeah. Tom, I'm a federal employee. What right. do you think I am? And then we went through the meeting, and she proceeded to tell me she'd been a long-term government employee. She had money in the thrift plan. She bought a home when she moved to the D.C. area in the mid-60s. She had some life insurance. Her husband had some life insurance. He had a TSP account. And I was jotting down some numbers, and I said to you, do you realize you're worth $1.5 million?
Oh, yeah.
And she said, well, if I'm worth so much money, how come I never seem to have any?
Yeah.
And that's something a lot of folks can relate to. Most of the things that they have that are really worth something, they can't spend.
Right.
Their retirement, their house, their TSP is not available to them until they retire, their life insurance. And many people do tend to underestimate the value of their estate.
Well, to me, estate planning is akin to long-term care insurance. You know, the difference is in long-term care, you hope you won't need it. In estate planning, regrettably, someday we all got to go, so it will happen. But I see both of them as a gift to your children, if you have them, or your loved ones, your family.
Absolutely. When you do a good estate plan, even if taxes aren't an issue, and even if you don't have a lot of money, by having a clear plan, you can make things a whole lot easier for your children. If you express what your wishes are clearly, in all likelihood, they're going to follow those wishes. Not because they necessarily get along with their brother or sister, but because they respect mom or dad.
Right, and then if you have if you have appointed someone to act as the estate planner, that takes the heat off the older brother or the younger sister doing it. Tom, as I was telling people before the show, I could leave the studio and just let you go because I know you do seminars and things all the time. But what do you want to get over? What do you want to tell people?
Well, I tell you, one of the things people really need to look at is they need to be aware that at the end of this year there could be a fairly dramatic change in the estate tax laws. Right now, the average federal employee simply doesn't need to worry about federal estate tax planning because the amount that's exempt from tax is $5 million. And let's face it, most of us don't have $5 million. But at the end of this year, unless Congress does something, the federal estate tax exemption is going to drop to $1 million. Now, that's still a huge amount of money. But the typical federal employee who's a longtime federal employee, who's lived in a major metropolitan area and owned a home, has a little bit of life insurance, a little bit of money in the TSP, and has an annuity under either CSRS or FERS, may well have an estate that is worth $1 million or more. And if Congress doesn't do anything with the federal estate tax law, that individual could face a significant tax liability. Let me just give you a very simple example. Let's say we have a husband and wife that between the two of them has $1.5 million. If the federal estate tax exemption drops to $1 million and both of those individuals die, they could face a federal estate tax liability of close to $250,000. That's real money, and it takes years and years and years to earn, save, pay taxes on, invest, and accumulate that amount of money. And through a little bit of estate planning, they can generally take steps that will help them either mitigate or totally avoid debt. So people need to be on the lookout for what's going to happen with the tax law at the end of this year.
You're worth more than you think. I guess everybody is worth. Now, the typical TSP balance, it seems to me, is like $130,000. So right away, if that's the average, that means a lot of people have more than that. Many have less than that. But that's a lot of money. If you're a homeowner in the Washington area, you may be, even with the depressed prices, you may be sitting on a gold mine. I had no idea that it was $5 million now. And when you say exempt from that, what does that mean? If I left $5 million, taxes on it?
If you left $5 million, there would be no federal estate tax whatsoever. Now, there may be a state estate tax. We have 50 states and they have 50 different sets of laws. But for folks who live in the D.C. metropolitan area, you may need to be concerned about a state estate tax if you live in either Maryland or D.C. Virginia completely eliminated its estate tax a number of years ago. And I know the show is broadcast to places outside the D.C. area, and what the estate tax laws may be in your state, they just vary all over the lot. Some states, the estate tax kicks in if you have assets of more than $300,000. That's in Ohio. Mm-hmm. In New Jersey, if you have assets more than $600,000. Many states have $1 million cutoff. But the estate tax exemption for the last several years has been at $5 million. That was part of a last-minute compromise between President Obama and a Republican leadership in Congress in 2010. And what's going to happen at the end of this year is anybody's guess.
Does something have to happen, does it revert to $1 million?
Right. This is part of what is commonly referred to as the Bush tax cuts.
Uh-huh.
Unless Congress does something affirmative, the exemption drops back to $1 million, and that's just one very, very small part of what could happen. For folks who are listening to this and tuning us out saying, I don't have $1 million, I'm not worried about that. Well, there are other things that could change that affect everybody. For example, right now the lowest tax bracket for income tax is 10%. That tax bracket is going to go away. So anybody who earns money could see a portion of their income taxed at a rate that's 5% higher than they've been paying for the last 9 years. The tax law that is about to expire could have very dramatic effects on everybody who has any income.
And none of the expiration is good, right?
No, none of it's good.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it depends on your perspective. The effect of all the expiration is going to be to increase everybody's tax liability. Everybody who has earned income pays Social Security tax. And unless Congress does something, the amount of Social Security tax you pay is going to increase by 2%. Unless the current law is extended.
That note, let's take a short break here. We'll be right back talking with Tom O'Rourke here on Federal News Radio.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
This morning off the coast of Hawaii, Raytheon Company's Next Generation Standard Missile 3 fired from USS Lake Erie destroyed a medium-range ballistic missile target for the first time. The target simulated ballistic missiles with ranges up to 3,500 kilometers, similar to those most likely to be seen from Iran or North Korea. The test marks the 21st successful intercept for the Raytheon SM-3 program, which remains a critical piece of the United States' phased adaptive approach for missile defense.
5 million hours of experience. 20 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
Accenture, high performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We help manage the world's largest biometric systems to protect U.S. citizens. And we help more than 20,000 U.S. communities better respond to natural disasters. As a partner with both public and private industry knowledge, Accenture brings unique insights to help federal organizations in their efforts to protect citizens at home and abroad. Accenture, high performance delivered. To learn more, visit Accenture.com/federal.
Public, private, hybrid. The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for June is the Foundation for the Advancement of Music and Education. This local nonprofit's dedicated to the accessibility of music, arts, and education for children and young adults in the greater Washington area. There's power in music, and together with FAME, your monetary and instrument donations can help build strong communities. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Tom O'Rourke. He's a Washington area attorney based in Rockville and an estate planner, and talking about why just about everybody needs an estate, and there's certainly those three documents you mentioned that people do need. We're all worth more dead than alive, and we're all worth more than we think we are. I was telling you what I hope is a fascinating story about uncle and aunt I lived with when I was a kid in Kentucky, and he was very eccentric and, as I said, well-read, not well-educated, but he had a temper, and he would, no telling how many wills he wrote, and he'd do it in pen and goose quill pen and that sort of thing, and he left things to various religious sects that he'd never had any dealings with. And at one point, the will that they found, it was no telling which will it was that he had intended, but the one that he'd found benefited his wife, whom he disliked intensely, and gave very little to his daughter, whom he loved dearly. And, of course, people figured somebody had cherry-picked and found the will they wanted. But he, using, you know, lack of, you know, being your own lawyer, he left his, he intended to leave his daughter the farm. But what he did in writing it was he left her the buildings on the farm, but not the land itself. Something about real property or whatnot. So, but he was the example of having a fool for a lawyer.
That does happen. That happens. People that handle these matters in a local register of wills office, when I talk to them, I say, you could write a book. And they say, boy, we sure could, because what you just described, unfortunately, is not uncommon. People many times will write a will, change their mind, not destroy the will, rewrite one. The new one gets lost, and the old one's the one that's found. And the one that's found and offered to probate is the operative will, unless somebody can prove that it was revoked. And many times they can't do that.
The first book that I ever heard of that was self-published that actually became a bestseller was one, you made me think of it, called How to Avoid Probate.
Oh, absolutely.
And I was just a young guy, didn't know what probate, what is that?
Well, How to Avoid Probate was written by a gentleman named Norman Dacey. And Mr. Dacey had a good idea, but he got in a lot of trouble for other reasons that I'll explain in a minute. Yeah. But what he was talking about is how you can create a revocable trust. You create the Mike Causey Revocable Trust, and you make it the owner of your property. And when you die, the trust is a legal entity. It doesn't die when you do. It just has another person who steps in, a new trustee steps in after you die. Because the entity that owns the property, the trust, didn't die, you do avoid probate. And revocable trusts are now a very, very common tool in many estate plans. And one of they do a lot of things, but one of the main goals that many people have when they set up a revocable trust is that they do it with the goal of avoiding probate, and it works. Now, Mr. Dacey carried his theory a step beyond that. He took the position that the trust was a separate entity. He assigned all of his income to the trust. He didn't report or pay any income tax, and he got in a big fight with the IRS, and like so many people, he lost.
Yeah.
But it was, Mr. Dacey was sort of a revolutionary at his time. Yeah. He did come up with an idea that has been widely adopted and used by many people. Any estate planning lawyer, I'm sure, uses revocable trusts all the time as part of the tools they recommend to their clients.
But they also recommend pay your taxes.
You pay your taxes. Yeah. You earn your money, you pay your taxes.
It's, what they say, half of all marriages end in divorce.
Right.
Numerous people, it's hard. I guess maybe many of us know more divorced people than single or than married. In a second or a third marriage, is a prenuptial agreement a good idea? And how would you broach that?
To answer your first question, it's always a good idea.
Okay.
Probably it's a good idea even the first time around.
Uh-huh.
But when you're 20 or 25 years old, neither you nor your intended has anything, so you don't do it.
Yeah.
But it's a good idea. It's always a good idea. How you broach it is something I've never been able to figure out. It always comes across that I love you, but I'm not quite sure I trust you.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to do. When I speak to people, I say, look, you know, now is the time of your life when you love and trust each other. Why not lay everything out clearly? Because many times people will have children from a first marriage that they want to protect. They love their spouse. They want to provide for their spouse. They also want to protect their children. And I know I had an example of a couple that had been married for over 50 years. And the man was insisting that his wife put all of her assets in a trust. And he gave the example. He said, Helen, you remember what happened when Mary died? Every widow in the neighborhood started bringing casseroles to Charlie, and one thing led to another. Uh-huh. They got married, and he put her name on everything. And when he died, their kids got nothing. Everything went to her. And he insisted he didn't want that to happen to his kids because he said, that's the type of guy I would be.
Mm-hmm.
I would be lonely if I lost you. So
protect me from myself.
Protect me from myself. And that many times is what people do in their estate plan. It generally, having a prenup for a marriage after your first marriage, particularly if you have children from that first marriage, is very important.
I would think, too, that, you know, it, rather than being insulting to somebody, that it protects both, and there's just as good a chance that the woman will have as much money or more than the man, and there's just as good a chance that the woman will love her kids and want to protect them as the man would with his family.
Well, and many times, particularly in the D.C. area, the issue becomes the house. They'll move into the house of one spouse or the other, and when the first spouse dies, they want to make sure their spouse has a right to live there for the rest of their mm-hmm. life, because that's become their home. But they also want it ultimately to go to the kids. And in the second marriage situation, you want to make sure your kids don't force your second spouse out, because they want to cash in.
Yeah.
They can't wait till the second spouse dies.
And I guess there's a way to handle that if your spouse outlives you, he or she lives in the house. But what happens if they marry again? And does the house then go to the second spouse?
That typically, I mean, if it's planned properly, no. If it's not planned properly, virtually anything can happen.
Okay. Tom, would you give us your email address real quick? And thank you so much for being here. If people want to get in touch with you.
Yeah, my email is t-o-r-o-u-r-k-e, O-R-O-U-R-K-E, at Miles Stockbridge. That's all one word, MILES-STOCKBRIDGE.com.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Taking the trek from Rockville, and we'll see you again soon. Be right back on Federal News Radio.
Hey, this is Amtower, host of Amtower Off-Center. Start your week off with a dose of reality, Amtower style, Monday afternoons at noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you want to know what it takes to do business with the federal government, my show is required listening. I've been around the block, and I call it like I see it. That's Amtower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
How does the current budget environment challenge your mission? What roles do mobility and innovation play in meeting your goals? Tune into Transforming Business Operations at the Defense Department. Hear Gino Magnifico, CIO of the Army Contracting Command. Mark Goodage, Chief Technology Officer for the Military Health Systems. Terry Edwards, Army ASA ALT, Director of the Office of the Chief Engineer and CIO. And Tim Solms, General Manager of the Department of Defense at Microsoft. Transforming Business Operations at the Defense Department. Made possible by Microsoft. Friday at 11 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
At Kaiser Permanente, we're about keeping you connected, so we made My Health Manager. It connects you to your doctor, your prescriptions, your test results, and your health records right at home. But what if you aren't home? What if you're visiting family, or at the beach, or on a business trip? What if you're on a steep mountain trail, you know, with loose gravel and one way in and one way out? Now, there's the Kaiser Permanente mobile app. It connects you right from your smartphone. You can email your doctor while visiting family, refill your prescription from the beach, take your medical records on a business trip, or schedule, say, a little checkup from that steep trail. No matter where you are, we'll keep you connected without keeping you from any of life's adventures. Get the app by searching Kaiser Permanente in the Android market or Apple App Store, or bookmark kp.org on your smartphone. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Apple is a registered trademark of Apple Inc. Android is a trademark of Google Inc.
Social media, healthcare provider profiles, sensor data, patient claims, biometrics, ISR, videos, images, credentials. Now more than ever, the federal government needs to track and understand the data terrain to bridge the gap from data to decision. Whether your platform is proprietary or open source, MarkLogic's proven big data enterprise-ready solution enables real-time, scalable management of complex volumes of information. To learn more about how to get the most out of your data, visit MarkLogic.com. That's MarkLogic.com.
The year was 1960. The month was May. The Cold War was heating up. And Kelly Johnson had just received a phone call from Washington and an assignment that would challenge his Skunk Works team as never before. To design and build an aircraft that couldn't be shot down, that could fly higher and faster than any other, that could carry cameras so sophisticated you could see the paint stripes on a parking lot from 90,000 feet, and the delivery deadline, 20 months. In other words, President Eisenhower wanted the impossible, and that's just what the Lockheed team delivered. The SR-71 Blackbird was and remains the world's fastest, highest-flying manned aircraft, a tribute to a group of people for whom the word impossible did not exist and never will. See their story and others unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100years.
Hi, this is David Gregory. Join me Sundays at 8 p.m. for Meet the Press right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. That's right, the same great show you watch Sunday mornings on NBC, you can also hear on the radio. For more than 60 years, Meet the Press has featured headline-making interviews with world leaders and U.S. newsmakers, including every president since John F. Kennedy. Tune in each week to hear analysis, discussion, and review the week's political events from noted journalists and experts. Sunday nights at 8, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And we're going to be talking about an incredibly important subject that's the kind of thing people don't want to think about, but it's the sort of thing you should be thinking about it as part of your estate planning and as part of, I like to think of it as a gift to your, maybe your spouse, a gift to your children, or a gift to your loved ones, and that is long-term care insurance. The federal program is 10 years old this year. And in the studio today, and they were gracious enough to fly down from New Hampshire, Paul Fort, who runs the overall program, and Mary Lou McGinnis, who is on the medical side of it. And well, thank you both for coming. And let me get on my soapbox for 2 minutes. I always do this with long-term care insurance. We're not being sponsored by it or in any particular group. But when I was at the Washington Post a long time ago, I got long-term care insurance probably much earlier than most people think you need it. About 5 years after that, my mother, who was a government worker, retired government worker, got long-term care insurance, not through your program, but she did get it, at least. She was hit with dementia, Alzheimer's, a vibrant woman, very active and athletic and a big-time walker, did not own a car until she was in her mid-30s. So she's a city gal and a walker. But this horrible thing hit her a bad 2 years before she died. But they were made so much better by the fact that she had long-term care insurance. So she had her civil service retirement benefit, some Social Security, and this long-term care insurance. And she had virtually 100% coverage. And as her only child, it saved me from a lot of not only heartache and financial stuff, and my four adult children and their spouses were very helpful in doing this. But it was a gift not only to herself but more to us. And I think about this, and I'm so glad I got it. Paul, 10 years on, how's it doing?
Well, Mike, it's doing very well. You know, this program, which was created by an act of Congress in 2000. And had its first open season in the early spring of 2002, is now, it's 10 years old. It was designed for the long haul. We're talking 50 plus years. It's just completed the first decade. It's mature. It's stable. We've had significant growth. We have some 270,000 people enrolled. It's global in reach in the sense that people are enrolled who live all over the world. And it provides comprehensive benefits. We think that it's really a national model for how private long-term care insurance can be delivered at a competitive cost to large numbers of people.
Well, it's Mary Lou and I were talking before the show about this is a subject people don't want to talk about, you know, because it means getting old, maybe getting dementia, going into a home away from your home. It's not kind of thing we don't want to contemplate. And people look at this insurance differently. You buy home insurance, you buy fire insurance, you buy auto insurance. You don't hope your house will burn down. You don't hope your car will be destroyed. You don't hope for any of these things. Yet with long-term care insurance, people somehow look at the premiums as this is something I'm gonna miss if I don't use them.
That's correct. I think we always look at this in a different sort of way than we do normally with insurance. And I think that you have to look at it as you do any other type of insurance. You hope like heck you don't have to use it. But as you mentioned, your experience with your mom, that's when people start identifying the fact that when the need exists, then there has to be something there to pay for it. And we talk about it like it maybe is always a nursing home. The reality is long-term care does not usually occur in nursing homes. People want it to occur in their home. And even in their home, though, it costs money. And so you have to have the financial backing in order to be able to pay for these things. Even having someone come into your home ends up being thousands and thousands of dollars a year that you have to be able to come up with to pay for. Well, so long-term care insurance does serve that purpose.
I've thought of it in retroactively is the best Christmas present she ever gave me.
Correct.
And the family. You know,
absolutely.
I think many people don't get what long-term care insurance is. They say, look, I've got Blue Cross, I've got APW, I have great health insurance. The government has its own programs. I have a good retirement, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid will take care of it. Not so, huh?
Not so at all. And I think that's probably one of the biggest and the most expensive misconceptions for people because it allows them to be lulled into a sense of security that, in fact, does not exist. Medicare can cover some certain types of things when skilled services are being required. When you're in the home, that means that a nurse or a therapist has to be required as part of your plan of care for Medicare to take care of it. If you're in a nursing home facility, Medicare will cover completely 20 days. After that first 20 days, there is a very steep copay that people have to pay. Even if Medicare is still paying, that copay comes into effect at that time. So you will often see people going into a nursing home for rehab and coming out at day 21 because that's the point in time when their own resources are going to have to be used. Over $200 a day. It changes every year, but it's over $200 a day now that will come out of their pocket. So it is not something Medicare covers. Medicaid will cover long-term care if there is a financial need. But that means spending down all of your assets, a little bit varying levels from state to state, but $2,500 is about the norm. So you have to have no assets over and above $2,500 with a certain few exceptions, like if your spouse is living in the home or that kind of thing. But overall, you have to be in a very financially destitute situation before Medicaid will come in. And with what's happening now with the state funding and whatnot, Medicaid funding is also very, very iffy as to whether you will be able to get the care where you want it.
If I could go back to just a point that we were making earlier about need, Medicare is geared, of course, to health care and especially to acute health care situations. You have an illness, you have a serious condition. It requires a doctor's intervention. You may have to go to the hospital. You may stay there for a few days. There is expected to be some kind of outcome. Therapies are applied, and then presumably you're going to get better and you're going to get discharged. Long-term care doesn't fit that pattern. That's why it really isn't covered by Medicare, why it's not covered by FEHB and other Medigap policies and other kinds of insurance that are geared to medical attention. It's for when you reach a point in your life, like your mother did, Mike, where you are not able to take care of yourself, whether due to some kind of frailty, physical incapacity, or because of a cognitive deficit. You can't take care of yourself. You're going to need personal nursing assistance from another person. And that's why it fills a need in retirement security that is otherwise not being met.
Well, the facility she was in was in Potomac, Maryland. And except for the fact, the reason you're there, I think any of us in this room would move there tomorrow. I mean, a beautiful place, and you had to worry about deer running you over when you went out into the front yard. And she objected because of all the old people. But, you know, which happens to us. But had she gone into a Medicaid facility, it'd be very different.
That's correct. Very often the county homes are the ones that accept Medicaid without limitations. However, the nice private homes will at best have a budgeted number of Medicaid beds that they will take, because keep in mind, Medicaid pays about half the amount that a private pay insurance or a private pay in general will cover. So facilities that are really nice that you'd like to live in and look at the deer are probably not going to have a lot of Medicaid beds
available. Yeah, they have as few as possible.
Choices. Your other reason is having options.
Now, with a long-term care policy, you buy it, you get a daily benefit, and you get it for a certain length of time. Is it 1 year to 3 years, 5 years to life?
Well, it varies on the underwriter. The federal long-term care insurance program will offer you a 2 year, a 3 year, a 5 year, or an unlimited program. By far the most popular choice now is the 3 year. And more specifically, a large number of people are buying the $150 a day policy, the standard 90 day waiting period, with a 4% compound increaser. So each year you have the benefit, your principal daily amount and your lifetime pool goes up by 4%. That's by far the most popular offering that we have under the new FELTSIP 2.0 program.
That's what I did not get. I bought a private plan, obviously, over the private sector, and it's good. And I think it's $150 a day, which really seemed like it was adequate in those days. Now it'll just pay a piece of it, but there is no inflation, or it's not inflation adjustment. It's a guaranteed, right?
Right. Well, this is if you buy the what we call the automatic compound increase option. Your benefit will go up either 4% or 5% per year, depending on which you've chosen. And that will keep that benefit fresh. But I think the thing to recognize as well is that many people are being more practical about their insurance purchase. They understand that insurance is there to cover the majority of their expense, the majority of their risk, not necessarily to take care of absolutely every single dollar that they might incur if they have a need many years down the road. And I think that's how we buy all insurance, and that's how we ought to buy insurance.
I want to ask you the what's in it for me question. We need to take a short break here on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
If you want to, you can make yourself pretty hard to find in a Jeep Compass. For starters, you can put some serious off-road miles behind you, thanks to its available trail-rated 4x4 capability with Freedom Drive 2 off-road package. Meanwhile, you have the added confidence of more than 30 available safety and security features, and the added benefit of up to 29 miles per gallon highway. Not to say it would be impossible to find you after all that, but it would probably take another compass to do it.
Say hello to summer with 0% APR financing, plus $500 bonus cash, or get $1,500 in total cash allowances when you finance a 2012 Jeep Compass. So get to your local Jeep dealer today. Based on EPA estimates, financing for well-qualified buyers through Ally Financial. Not all buyers will qualify. Residency restrictions apply. Offers end July 2nd, 2012. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC.
Supporting our troops has never been more important, and the military's need for strategic procurement decisions has never been stronger. Smart sourcing begins with GSA's multiple award schedules. GSA makes it easier to get what you need, when you need it, on time and on budget. You'll save time and money by reducing costly delays in purchasing services and products with the flexibility and control you need to negotiate better pricing. GSA also provides best value through established contracts with pre-qualified vendors and streamlined access to a wide selection of contractors. You can also create blanket purchase agreements to meet your command's recurring requirements. To find out how GSA's multiple award schedules can help you support your mission, visit gsa.gov/ACQMPM. That's gsa.gov/ACQMPM.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
This morning off the coast of Hawaii, Raytheon Company's Next Generation Standard Missile 3 fired from USS Lake Erie destroyed a medium-range ballistic missile target for the first time. The target simulated ballistic missiles with ranges up to 3,500 kilometers, similar to those most likely to be seen from Iran or North Korea. The test marks the 21st successful intercept for the Raytheon SM-3 program, which remains a critical piece of the United States' phased adaptive approach for missile defense.
5 million hours of experience. 20 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This is Mark Amtower. For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Paul Forday and Mary Lou McGinnis from Federal Long-Term Care Partners, 10th year of the federal program. 275,000 people are in it, and that is a very good thing. We we've covered what the long-term care insurance does, or a lot of it. And remember, our shows are archived here on Federal News Radio, so you can listen to them at your leisure or tell a friend. And this is really not a fun subject, but it's so important. It's part of estate planning, and many people consider buying long-term care insurance as a gift, maybe the ultimate gift for your kids, your loved ones, your spouse, whoever may be set up to take care of you. And Paul, I think we must have made a mistake here, because we're talking about the typical claim on average today is at age 73. Surely that's not.
No, that's actually correct. And I think it speaks to a number of things about our program. Our primary reason for opening a claim for somebody tends to be because of a diagnosis of cancer. That's followed by cognitive disorders like Alzheimer's disease or other cognitive impairment issues, and neurological diseases such as Parkinson's or ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. So I think that the fact that those diseases tend to occur at or begin at earlier ages is what leads into that. The other thing I would like to mention is that people often assume that you go into a long-term care situation and that's where you are until you die. And that, in fact, is not true either. We actually have about a 13% recovery rate where people come in and receive treatment, receive that custodial support that they need for a period of time, and then the situation that led them into claim improves, and they actually come out of claim so that they can, in fact, have that money available for them the next time they need it.
Right. Paul mentioned during the break that if I buy a 3-year policy and use up a year of it, but I don't use it on weekends or somebody comes in, that it's a cumulative total. You get 3 years, period, 365 times three, huh?
Right. You're only
charged for
right. Yeah. Right. You're only charged for the actual expenses that you receive reimbursement on. If you don't use the program because you're being supplemented by family members or friends, then that money stays in your pool until you have use of it down the road. It doesn't just go away. It's not a 3-year calendar thing where it starts today and 3 years from this day, that's it. It expires. It's not like term insurance.
3 actual years. Yeah. Really, we talked about what the typical patient is, but what does the claim look like? And you were talking about care coordination services before, and I think I understand that, but maybe not.
Correct. Interestingly, we get our first call most often from family members, and we'll actually get a rash of calls next week following Mother's Day. This is very common for us after holiday visits home when distant relatives realize that mom and dad actually need a lot more assistance than what they did the last time they saw them. We have a registered nurse who will field that initial call and begin getting that information that they need in order to look at benefit eligibility to see whether, in fact, the person qualifies. There continues to be a lack of understanding on what long-term care actually covers, even among medical professionals. So frequently, if someone needs just light housekeeping or help in transportation to the doctor's office, the doctor will say, well, you should go ahead and use your long-term care insurance policy. It actually is used for very specific criteria, and that is that you need assistance with 2 of the activities of daily living, or you have a cognitive impairment that is measured. And those are the things that we look at in benefit eligibility. Once the benefit eligibility has been determined and it is deemed that you do, in fact, have these symptoms that we need to look at, we end up having a assessment go into the home to actually look at these activities of daily living. And we'll actually observe a mock shower and dressing situation, along with transferring and feeding yourself. And we administer a cognitive screening test so that we actually get good baseline information on how those functions are occurring in the home. We would deny up to about 2.1% program to date of people who come in and are not meeting the benefit eligibility criteria. But the truth is the majority of those people come back later. They maybe just haven't reached that point yet, but they will come back later and they will meet that criteria and they will go into claim. After the benefit eligibility has been determined, the plan of care is developed between the family and the client and the nurse, and we determine exactly what types of care are required to meet the needs that person has. So the plan of care is developed, and then it is reevaluated periodically to make sure that it is continuing to meet the need. I think that Paul mentioned 30% of our people are going into, are receiving their care by way of an informal provider. Another 25% get their care from home care providers like home health agencies. So literally 55% of our people get their care in the home, and then the 15% in nursing homes, and another 25% in assisted living facilities. So that's sort of how our care is, our plan of care is developed. One of those sites of care are going to be used, and the amount of care, the intensity we call it, that's required will be reevaluated over time to make sure that we keep up with what the needs are if they're changing in the home.
Well, I'm not trying to shill for you here, but I mean, it looks like there might be situations where when you deny somebody a benefit, you're actually helping them out. Because if I really just want a housekeeper for the day,
that's right.
Why use up that $150?
Yeah.
Is that right?
And of course, if we were to approve such use, then the cost for everybody, the premium cost, would have to be going up, because we would have many, many more claims, since many people would appreciate having a little extra assistance.
Need some yard
especially
work.
As they get older.
Yeah.
So that's why the criteria are there.
It's important to know that our claim block has changed a lot. I think I was here about 6 years ago, Mike, and we were very few. We had a very few number of claims. But program to date now, we've had over 8,000 claims, and we've actually paid over $250 million out in claims. So the program is working, but part of our educational function is to make sure we help people conserve that money so that it is there and used only when it's needed. It helps protect from premium increases going on, and it also helps protect that pool of money that you have specifically to use in the future as your change needs
to change. With the caveat that you can get cancer at any age, you can step in front of a bus at any age, you can have a stroke, but is there kind of a tipping point age when people should have long-term care insurance?
Well, I think that most people begin doing serious retirement planning about the age of 50. Some people who are very conscientious begin that process a lot earlier. And of course, they're already enrolled in various savings plans. But by the time you're 50, I think you really need to be looking hard at this risk. You're thinking about how many more years you'll work until you get to retirement, what kind of benefits you'll have in retirement, what kind of income you're going to have, whether you're going to purchase annuities to help you along. And I think that that's the time to think about long-term care and the risk of long-term care. You may decide that you want to self-insure it, or you may decide that you're going to buy into a continuing care retirement community or use home equity or some other vehicle, and that's fine if you decide to do this. The important thing is to make sure that you make an informed decision concerning this risk, that you don't ignore it, because as we've been talking about, it does pose a major risk to your retirement security and to your family. So it's too important to put off much beyond that age.
Very good. Thank you, Mary Lou. Thank you, Paul, for being here. We're going to get you back on the 11th anniversary, if not before. Have a good week, everybody. Pass the show on to a friend. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Thanks.
Thank you so much.